Hello and welcome, everyone. We are going to get started in a few minutes. We are just waiting while everybody is joining. This is the solicitation webinar for the Smart Health Program, and we are just going to get started in a few minutes. Please use the Q&A feature for any questions. We're going to put that in the chat for instruction in a minute. Thank you.
Do you have any favored questions you want to answer in person?
Mom, you mean to, hi, Sylvia. You mean to allow people to say it out loud?
Yeah, well, so you get the choice of doing, of either answering with text or you tick it as answer in person or whatever the thing is.
We're going to, after the webinar, after we do the presentation, we were going to do them live. So, some of our PDs that are here, we've asked everybody to also answer questions with text while we're doing the webinar. So okay. If there's an one, we can flag it to also say it out loud. That
right.
would be great.
So you can put in an answer, but it still shows it as answer out loud.
Okay. That sounds perfect. That's going to be great. All right. Welcome again to everybody who's just joining us. We are going to start in a couple of minutes. By 2:05, we are just giving everyone a chance to join. We are going to have a presentation on the new solicitation, and then we're going to have a Q&A session. Please use the Q&A feature. This is a repeat of September 25th's webinar, so there isn't any new material, but it's mostly for people who weren't able to attend the first one or would like to, you know, join us again. For a refresh of everything that we already said on the September 25th one. We get the question a lot about whether this webinar is going to be recorded, and that the answer is yes, it's going to be recorded. The slides, with caption. And the recorded video are going to be posted on the events page for today and then with a link in our program page. So the recording from today and the slides and material is going to be available. Okay, we're going to start in like about a minute. All right. The number seems to be stabilizing or not for the participants that are joining. Again, so let me just start from the top. Since it's 2:05, let's get the webinar started. Before we get started, I'm just going to say this webinar is going to be recorded and it's going to be posted on our program page. The events page will have the slides and all the material. You can find a link on the bottom of our program page, which we will show, which we'll share throughout the presentation today. So today we're here to talk about the smart health and biomedical research in the era of artificial intelligence and advanced data science, or short SCH for short, new solicitation. I am here with my colleagues from NSF and NIH, my partner for all this SCH activities, Tom Martin, David Zahavi, and Dana Wolf-Hughes, and our other PDs here. So I wanted to go around and do introductions. Tom, do you want to go first?
Thanks, Gully. Hi, everybody. I'm Tom Martin. I'm a program director in Information and Intelligence Systems with Gully, and I'm a rotator from Virginia Tech.
Thank you. David?
Sure. Hi, everyone. So my name is David Zahavi. I'm a AAAS Science and Technology Policy Fellow at the National Cancer Institute at the National Institutes of Health. And I work with Dana Wolf-Hughes, who is one of the co-leads on the Smart Health program.
Thank you. Dana, would you like to?
Hi, everybody. I'm Dana Wolf-Hughes. Like David said, I'm a program officer at the National Cancer Institute, and along with Goli and Tom and David, and then Yanli Wang, who couldn't join us today, we co-lead the Smart Health Initiative.
Thank you. Sylvia, would you like to introduce yourself?
Oops, I'm Sylvia Spengler. I'm a program officer at the National Science Foundation in Information and Intelligence Systems, and I'm one of the NSF supporting program officers. And I will, if the questions get hysterical, be answering questions.
Thank you. Thank you. Georgia Ann and Shivani, would you guys like to go next?
Yes, welcome everybody. I'm Georgia Ann Klutke. I am a program officer in the engineering directorate. So as you all know, this is a cross-disciplinary solicitation. So my home program is operations engineering, although I'm doing a detail this at currently over in SAIS. And so welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, we're so excited to have Georgiana on the SAIS side for a little bit. Shivani, would you like to go?
Sure. My name is Shivani Sharma, and I'm the new program director in the engineering directorate for CMMI. And I am taking over the biomechanics and mechanobiology program. So looking forward to working with you all. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And welcome to all of our colleagues and welcome to all the attendees. Again, my name is Goli Yamini, and I'm a PD in the SAIS IIS division. Here's the rest of our team from the NSF side. Tom Martin, we already met, Stephen Breitler, Yulia Gell, James Fowler, Georgia Ann, we already met, Tatiana Berleski, Vishal Sharma, Sylvia Spengler, who's also here with us today, Betty Toller, and Christopher Yang. I want to hand things off to David to tell us a little bit about the NIH side.
Sure. Thank you, Goli. So currently there are 29 institute centers and offices that participate in smart health across NIH. And so we cover a wide range of interests in health conditions and biomedical, public health, and behavioral science areas. As you can see from the slide, we have a large number of individuals at NIH involved in smart health. And between the NIH and NSF, there are over 100 people involved in this rather large initiative.
Thanks. So you might ask what was the motivation for bringing NSF and NIH together for the Smart Health program? We've seen computing, engineering, and math and social behavioral sciences really transforming the world with their new findings, and we haven't seen a lot of those necessarily applied to health. So this program was started to kind of bring those advancements into the health arena. The proposals here would have to address research gaps in science and engineering with a key health or biomedical problem. This is a use case inspired research, and we're going to talk a lot more about that. But the teams that we're looking at must include appropriate research and basically research expertise for the requirements of the proposal. And obviously, it's they have to complement rather than duplicate some of the core work that is being done in other programs. We're going to talk more about some of this detail later on, but what I want to make sure sticks in everybody's mind and we're very well aware of is that November 9th at 5 p.m., your local time, is a due date for the proposals. These are integrative projects with a total cost budget of $1.2 million. That includes direct and indirect. The teams are obviously going to be interdisciplinary, but the advancement is going to be in fundamental science with at least two NSF disciplines. Again, as I said, this is a youth-inspired basic research program. David, did you want to comment at all about the cost before I hand things off to Tom?
Yeah, sure. Again, thanks, Goli. So what's important to reiterate for individuals applying to Smart Health that maybe are more familiar with the NIH application is that, as Goli mentioned, the total cost is $1.2 million over 4 years, and that this includes both direct and indirect costs, which is a little bit different. This is important not only due to the different structure for your application, but also because if you eventually are selected for funding through NIH, you will have to transform your budget back to the NIH format. So just please keep that in mind. But for now, I'll hand it over to Tom.
Thanks, David. Next slide, Goli, please. So Smart Health is a case of use-inspired basic research. So back in the 90s, Donald Stokes came up with a model called Pasture's Quadrant, where he put the quest for basic understanding on one axis and the considerations of use, applied research on another axis. While the NSF supports basic research like fundamental physics, the Niels Bohr quadrant on this figure. What Smart Health is looking for is analogous to Louis Pasteur. So Louis Pasteur did fundamental microbiology, but it was aimed at having an impact on his community. And so there's also the applied quadrant represented here by Steve Jobs, who took fundamental science and created applications out of that science. And while that's important, it's not what we're looking for in Smart Health. What we're looking for is fundamental advances in science and engineering that address a health or biomedical issue, and that where advances that are transformative, high risk, and high reward, like Pasteur. We want advances in computer science, information science, engineering, mathematics, statistics, behavioral cognitive science, and we want those to help address pressing questions in the biomedical and public health communities. We want advances that cover a research gap, not just taking existing techniques and applying them to a health issue. So what are the gaps in fundamental science and engineering that have to be addressed before you can make an advance on the key health issue? That's what we're looking for in Smart Health. And so it's this combination of making an advance in fundamental science and engineering while addressing a key health issue. This combination is going to require that you have appropriate research expertise, as Goli mentioned, that covers all the major aspects of your project. So one of the common questions we get is, do you need a clinician on your team? And the answer to that is no, you don't have to have a clinician, but what you do need is somebody with the appropriate research expertise, someone who knows the relevant research literature, which could be somebody from biology or public health, for example, or a clinical researcher. Next slide, Goli, please. So the current solicitation has 7 themes that we'll discuss over the next few slides. So these themes are detailed in the solicitation, but don't feel limited to these themes with your proposals. Whether your idea fits into one of these themes or not, we recommend you talk to an NSF program director, and we fully expect that a lot of proposals will cover multiple themes and like I said, maybe go beyond them. So with that, I'll hand it over to David.
Yeah, so as Tom noted, these themes are not mutually exclusive or all encompassing. You know, we encourage applicants to come and present their perspective and ideas. For the first theme that we will discuss, fairness and trustworthiness, the focus here is on real-world considerations beyond conventional analytical approaches. So this includes new directions for computational science that are fair and trustworthy for clinicians, patients, and participants. And really underpinning that are areas such as addressing algorithmic bias, realizing the benefits of data fairness, new models for causality, and new methods to address disparities and improve equity. Next slide, please. Another theme is transformative analytics, and this includes several bucketed areas such as fusion and analysis of multi-level and multi-scale data, especially in scenarios of noisy or limited data, new tools and techniques for visualization and modeling of the data, and behavioral, contextual, and multi-modal data. Next slide.
So another theme is multimodal and reconfigurable sensors. And these sensors should not be a single type of sensor, but instead they should be integrated systems that sense different types of signals, not just electrochemical, but other signals such as biochemical, magnetic, acoustic, and so on. Next slide, please, Goli. We're also interested in cyberphysical systems that are aimed at biomedical areas. So these cyberphysical systems are closed loop or human in loop systems that combine computation, communication, and control. Cyberphysical systems research can cover a wide, So CPS research can cover a wide variety of fundamental topics such as dependability, trustworthiness, high assurance, formal verification, and even unconventional substrates, for example, with integrated electronic and biological substrates. Next slide, please, Goli. The robotics theme covers intelligence that's embodied in such a way to process information, sense, plan, and move within or substantially alter its working environment. So we're looking for novel robotics that address a key health issue, such as enhancing health, improving social connection, or reducing disability. Research issues in human-robot interaction are also important. So next slide, Goli. And back to you, I think.
Thank you, yeah. So the topic of biomedical image interpretation, it is really divided into presentation, essentially of how human pattern recognition, visual searches, perceptual learning, attention bias, things like that can really affect how observers understand images. Really want to understand the context and the environment, and that is includes human environment. When you're looking at an image, you're doing image analysis, either collecting or doing image analysis when you're looking at that, what kind of things, both in context and environment, are we seeing? But also ways to exploit these is understanding. Like, can they help perceptual decision making? And this could, you know, this could be in both 3D and 4D. The last topic that we, the last theme in this solicitation, which is not mutually exclusive with any of the other themes, is unpacking health disparities and health equality and health equity. Where you live determines your life expectancy and relates to social determinants of health. What we see here is a map of New Orleans, and it, you can see marked the life expectancy based on the area that you live in. For example, the suburban area that's affluent, the life expectancy is higher than some of the other low-income areas. And for this, the goal is, for the development and research, the goal is to reduce, assess, and mitigate some of these social determinants and bias related or issues related to that that may affect health. So let's move to sort of going over a little bit of the review process here at NSF and kind of walking you guys down what the path looks like. We get a lot of questions about this. So we want to, I personally want everybody to understand that these are NSF proposals and the review process is an NSF review process, but it is going to be joint. So the proposals come into NSF, they get paneled and reviewers are recruited by the NSF and the panel is held together by NSF PDs, put together by NSF PDs. But during the day of the panel, we have someone from NSF and a science review officer, a PD from NSF and a science review officer from NIH. And so we do rankings from the NSF side, and then the NIH SRO also does collect scores for the NIH purposes. David, do you wanna kind of add a few things here before we move on to the next step?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so as Goli said, your applications will be submitted directly to NSF with a deadline this round of November 9th, 5 p.m. your local time. They have to be submitted in the NSF form, and then NSF and NIH work together on these joint review panels that include an NIH SRO. So your applications will receive both an NSF and an NIH score. For the NIH side, once those scores are done, the applications are then also percentiled, but the reviews are written in the NSF format. So at this point, everything's in the NSF format except the NIH scores and percentiles. And at that time, NIH staff will meet to discuss which applications are of interest to NIH institutes and centers. If this were to occur for your application, you would receive an email notifying you and providing instructions for how to move forward with resubmitting the application to NIH. It's important to note that this does not mean you're going to be re-reviewed. It just, your application will go through what we call a dummy panel in the system. The NIH scores from the initial process are then released, and then everything that you would do normally for NIH funding, such as going to council, stays the same. I'll stress again that your applications will only be reviewed once, where they receive both that NSF and NIH score. As for a timeline, for November submissions, they'll be reviewed this winter. Selection would happen in early spring. And then if you are selected for NIH, you'd go through council sometime between May and August, depending on the IC. And this means that depending on the IC you are selected to receive funding from, you could receive your award either in the fall, or for NCI as an example, it would be December. For NIH applications, we encourage you to remain in contact with the PO of your selected IC for updates. Tom Goli, anything to add?
Go ahead, Tom.
No, I was just going to say, no, David, I think you covered it very well between the two of you.
Thank you. I just wanted to highlight again something that David said. He discussed the timeline of how this, you know, it may take up to December to get funding, especially if you get your proposal gets picked by the NIH. But because of the joint, like, interagency nature of the program, our timeline tends to be stretched out a little bit. By the time the NIH has their picks and then NSF has their picks, the timeline may be a little bit stretched. So, I just wanted to note that. And with that, let's move forward to the merit review elements. And I'm going to hand things off.
Thanks, Goli. Remember, these are NSF proposals. They go to NSF review panels. And so the standard NSF review criteria of intellectual merit and broader impacts apply. The elements will be applied to both criteria, and they should be considered in top-down order. So as we've said before, smart health proposals have to make fundamental contributions in science and engineering. Next slide, please, Goli. So the broader impacts include benefits to society and advancing desired societal outcomes. This is not an exhaustive list, but it's important to keep in mind that the broader impact can't just be the biomedical or health impact. You have to think beyond just the biomedical or health areas. Next slide, please, Goli. So over the next few slides, we're going to discuss the smart health specific review criteria in terms of the scientific requirements, the collaboration and management plan, and the evaluation plan. But I will say, on the scientific requirement, like I just said, you need to think about what are the advances in the foundational science and engineering? How novel and transformative are they? Is there a good plan for making those advances? Does the proposal include the right team? And do they have good institutional support? Next slide, please, Goli. And I think it's back to you, actually.
Yes, thanks. So we mentioned a few times that this isn't integrative, this isn't an interdisciplinary program. And we mentioned that the requirement is that the proposals contribute to at least two fundamental science and engineering areas in NSF. So this is a list of areas, for example, not limited to this list, but of the directorates of size, engineering, math and statistics, and SPE, social, behavioral, and cognitive sciences. So what I wanted to point out here, that the two disciplines that are, or the two areas that are being picked for focus, can either be from two different directorates or within the same one. So it could have, your proposal could have elements of computer science and engineering, or SPE and math, or any other one, or it can be two different areas of computer science, like it could be natural language processing and AI, or it could be like sensors and operation systems or something like that, or closed loop systems. Or so within either two different areas within the same discipline or two different disciplines, any combination is fine. But again, we want to highlight that it has to have these, it has to make advancements in these areas with the use case being health. So if the main contribution is in health, it's not gonna essentially meet the goals of the proposal. And it may be better that it's reformatted and depending on the topic submitted to NIH directly. But yep, that's all I wanted to say for this one. For the collaboration plan, each proposal must include a collaboration and management plan as a supplementary document. The limit is 2 pages, so no more than that. It is going to include a description of the team and their roles. It is going to have a plan of integration and basically how the interdisciplinary collaboration, the team science, is going to be done. And the team members' expertise have to match the overall project. Again, this is where questions of, do we need a clinician? Do we need somebody from this expertise or that expertise comes into play? You will need a clinician if you need that for your research, but the expertise have to be there. Another question that we also get is, does it have to be in sort of a very experienced person? Can it be a new PI? It really just depends on if the expertise match the needs of the proposal. So this is where you need to explain to the panel and to us how everybody's expertise is coming together and how everybody's going to work together to make the goals of the proposal achievable. Tom and David, do you guys want to talk about the data management?
Sure. Thanks, Gully. So all the proposals have to include a data management plan. It's up to 2 pages. It's described in the grant proposal guide. But your data management plan has to describe how the proposal will conform to the NSF policy on dissemination and sharing of research results. There's a couple of links here that provide more details on the NSF's data management plan. And then projects that are selected for NIH funding will be required to comply with the NIH data management and sharing policy. And I'll let David talk about that for a second.
Yeah, so thanks, Tom. The biggest piece of advice here is to follow everything above for NSF first and foremost, since that's where your applications are submitted. This is more just of a heads up that if your application were selected to move over to NIH, you must then also comply with the NIH data management and sharing policy. And we will include instructions when you are notified of any selection by NIH. Thankfully, there's mostly overlap between the NSF and NIH as to the requirements of these policies, and only a few things will be unique to NIH.
Yeah, and actually, Gully, before we go to this slide, I just want to emphasize for people, because it's kind of, it can be a little confusing if you don't understand the process. The only projects that are going to have to do this part about the NIH data management plan are just the projects that are selected for funding by the NIH. You don't have to take care of this when you submit your proposal. It'll only be the lucky few that get selected for NIH funding. So just want to make that as clear as possible. And then in terms of evaluation, all the proposals must include an evaluation component. So the evaluation can target multiple areas. So it can target things like the technical functioning, the validity and reliability of the outcomes, the usability, the impact on the biomedical or health outcomes. But the evaluation should not include randomized clinical trials. This is meant to be early stage research. It's not ready for a broad clinical trial. Though I think one of the questions that was asked was that in terms of the technical definition at the NIH, it might be considered a randomized clinical trial. But what we really mean is sort of something ready for being deployed. This is really intended to be early stage research. Next slide. Yeah.
Hey, thank you so much, Tom, and especially for highlighting that about the data management plan specifics for the NIH. just a few final comments. We want to emphasize what is and isn't appropriate for this solicitation. As we said, the advancement has to be in science and engineering and with a use case, basically, scenario. The focus, if the focus is only advancing biological or biomedical sciences, without any new fundamental science or engineering, that's not going to be a good fit. If you propose an application for existing fundamental science, but it is a new application for biomedical, that is not appropriate. Like if you're building a new app or repurposing an app for health conditions, we are not looking, we're not looking for incremental work or sort of repurposing of stuff. And the focus of it has to fit the mission of the agency. So again, if it is health oriented, it is, it should be sent to NIH. That's not going to be a good fit for smart health. We want, in order for you to see sort of like some examples of what is appropriate, we recommend you check out the previous awards. The way that you can do that is just go on our website under awards, click on search award, and then when the search page comes up, you can type in SCH, and then you'll see all like the previous awards up, and it'll help you hopefully give you an idea of what sorts of projects are a good fit for smart health. Sort of like, what is that science and engineering and biomedical or health aspects, like what the balance is that we're looking for. David, do you want to walk us through the NIH side of how we can see the same thing there?
Yeah. Similarly at NIH, we have Reporter. And so if you navigate to the website, you can use the advanced project search function and enter the text SCH when searching by project title. And that will pull up a list. Next slide, please. And so, yeah, that'll pull up a list of applications that were funded by NIH through this program. And when you click on these grants, you will see that they are written in the NSF style and language and can get really a sense of proposals that were selected by NIH. And again, I'll just reiterate, as we're talking about the criteria, that health is a use case that really takes a backseat to the intellectual merit and broader impacts that will be evaluated by NSF.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, Tom's going to take it. Please go ahead.
Okay. So if you'd like to get feedback on your proposal, send a one-page summary to the NSF SCH-correspondence@nsf.gov address. And so a summary of your idea that briefly describes the project, the intellectual merit, and that means the specific advances you expect to make in fundamental science engineering and the broader broader impacts, which include the health outcomes, outreach, and education. Do not send an NIH specific aims page. This is meant to be an NSF proposal. And there's a link at the bottom there that has a more detailed description of the one-page summary. David, do you have anything to add to that?
I can jump in here just to say, for those thinking about reaching out to NIH, remember that these proposals are submitted to NSF. It's most important that your application meets their format and needs. Therefore, you should get their feedback first. If you have questions on the health context or use cases that you'll have in your proposal, we work very closely with our NSF colleagues and they will reach out to us as needed and set up any future meetings. Please do not reach out to NIH POs, as you're most likely just going to be routed right back to NSF, and this could delay getting your feedback. We encourage you to send your one-page summary to the above address just as soon as possible.
Thank you. So here are NSF links. How does one apply? You can go to the solicitation and look at the specifics. For the NIH specific interest, you can incorporate it, but based on your proposal. But again, what we keep reiterating, and we all of us just said, it has to be, your proposal has to be written in NSF format, and it has to have a transformative science aspect. there really isn't, besides sort of looking at the institute specific interest and sort of trying to incorporate it somehow, there really isn't a way for you to target the NIH side. Again, refer to the PACG for guidance on how to write it. And if you have any questions, please email us at schcorrespondence@nsf.gov. If you'd like to join our listserv, please use these instructions. I also here want to pitch and ask for your help with the program. If you're interested in serving on review panels, please email me. Let us know. You can email our SCH correspondence alias here as well, and let us know that you'd like to be considered for being a reviewer for Smart Health, or other related programs, and I'll be happy to add you to our listserv. Dana usually concludes this here as far as how it's a relay. David, do you want to close this out?
Sure, I can close this out. You know, hopefully we made it clear through this presentation that for this initiative, we are looking for things that will advance, you know, fundamental science. And we really think about it as sort of this handoff between basic and applied science. That's all I have.
Thank you so much. Again, thank you all for joining us today. Thank you to all the attendees and our colleagues who are panelists. Please email your questions at schcorrespondence@nsf.gov. But before that, please submit them to the Q&A feature here, and we'll be happy to answer them. So I want to move forward now with the Q&A feature. We have some questions here, and our colleagues have been busy answering some in text already. But let's get started with the Q&A portion. Tom, do you want to pick a question to answer first, and we'll go from there?
Actually, I don't want to put Sylvia on the spot, but the first question is about how important are preliminary results? And it says Sylvia would like to answer it. So Sylvia, do you want to take a shot at it?
I don't need to answer it live, but I do think it should be answered live.
Okay.
That is indications and reasons for success and reasons why your hypothesis that the system will work are critical as a start. You don't need preliminary results in the classic NIH way, but you do need some indication that the approach is correct.
Thanks, Sylvia. And I'll add my own spin on that, which is you need evidence that your plan is going to work, and that evidence takes many forms. And preliminary results are one form of evidence, but they're not the only form of evidence. So.
Dana, do you want to expand a little, or David, would you guys like to expand a little bit? There's a question that says NSF recommendation and NIH quantitative scores are likely to correlate. Any specific strategy to coordinate it? For the submission, we don't need to specify which NIH agency is relevant, and it will be automatically matched, correct? Which is correct. They don't need to, there's no addressing NIH, but I was wondering if you guys could expand on that.
Yeah, I mean, I can expand on it a little. So applicants cannot choose whether you're going to get funded through NSF or NIH. You're going to get one or the other, or not funded. While scores might correlate, that's not always the case. Again, you should just make sure that your proposal fits the program and really matches the NSF evaluation criteria. And then from there, your submissions will be looked at, and using the NIH score, it will be then selected and be matched with ICs. You don't need to specify that.
Thank you. The next question is about the research content, and essentially asking if, basically they're saying it's governed by NSF. The proposal should have a biomedical application, but that's not ready to be implemented. And that's correct. So the research content, again, as we said, it's the two main focus areas for science and engineering under NSF, with health being a use case. And that does not mean that it has to be at the implementation level. So it could be for discovery or all like a whole array of things that is not necessarily ready to be implemented in a clinical setting. Tom or David, do you guys want to add anything to that, sort of clarifying?
No, I think you did just fine, Billy.
Yep, okay. I agree.
All right. Any other questions that pops out to anybody to discuss?
Yeah, Goli, I have one for you all to answer. So someone asked about sort of biological sciences being missing from the focus area. So for example, somebody who is a PI in engineering collaborating with an individual who is a biochemist or microbiologist. Will the biochemist microbiologist be an eligible second field, and do eligible areas exclude sort of on the flip side of that biochemistry or microbiology?
So the, and my NSF colleagues, please step in, but short answer is yes. It doesn't include, so bio directorate is not a part, so biology is not included as one of the main disciplines from the NSF side. The bio and microbio aspect that we see is usually in health, not necessarily advancing biology. Sylvia, did you want to?
No, you got it in one. It's the advances in biology per se or not. There may be specific kinds of chemistry insights that might make sense in a health context, but we do not focus on the biology.
Thank you for expanding on that. Yeah, it's not. It's a good question because it is they're so related, and it's like a closed field, but it cannot be one of the core areas of advancement. It's going to have to be a use case again.
Maybe I could add too. Look at the title of the solicitation. It involves artificial intelligence and data science in the title. So that's probably where you want to put the impact if you're going to go outside of engineering for the other discipline, is something that would involve new data science and artificial intelligence revolving around a health problem.
Thank you. I was going to add a question. What Sylvia, you were talking about preliminary data. Do you mind? There's a related question that says, "What other forms of evidence can be used apart from preliminary data?"
Work. There yes. can be theory. There can be theory that says it should work, and you haven't, and it hasn't been tried, but you have a mechanism for doing it. And a way forward, it can be published work. We don't want to see your published work cited other than as a citation, but lots of times to explain why you think something. If it's a published work, you need to be clear about that. And if you are talking about things that are already published, it is critical that you be clear about what is already published versus what it is you are proposing.
Thank you. Okay. Somebody asked how they can join the for reviews. I am putting that in the chat as requested. So you can email me or our alias to be added to the reviewer list, potential reviewer list.
Goli and Tom, I see a question. What is the expected turnaround time to get feedback on the one-page summary, and is there a suggested deadline for the same?
So I've been trying to turn things around within 24 or 48 hours, but that's not a guarantee. And particularly as we get closer to the submission deadline, the things are ramping up. So I would say if you email me in the last week or 2 weeks, you might not get a response given the rate things are coming in now. So, but I will say please do pay attention to what we said about sending it in the NSF one-page summary format. I've had quite a few that are a list of specific aims. And so, and I've just reached the point of saying, sending it back and saying, rephrase this as intellectual merit and broader impacts. So that'll save you a turnaround time.
And Georgia Ann is writing an answer, but I'd like to answer live the one on, is the low funding level common in the program? And the answer is, we get a lot of good proposals that we can't fund, even with NIH as a partner. But it makes a difference how highly rated it is. Because we try very, very hard to publish, to fund the highly competitive ones.
And I would add to that, there are multiple panels. We get a lot of proposals. And as Sylvia said, a lot of really good proposals. You can look at the solicitation for roughly the level of funding that we have available. And so if you do the division, you can see there are probably way more good proposals than we are able to fund.
I think that's all the questions, although a few are still coming in that were asked. Some of them had written answers. I wanted to see if anyone in our group that gave any written answers that they think should be highlighted for everybody.
Tom, I highlighted the last one.
Yep. Yeah, I just saw that come in. I was about to answer it.
Good. You highlighted. I just wanted to make sure it got taken up.
Yeah. So one way to think about this, I'm not saying there is a single formula for successful smart health proposal, but you know, an archetype of a successful smart health proposal is think of the health problem as the application. You know, here's it's been described to me as having a funnel, and the wide part of the funnel at the beginning of the proposal is here's this health problem. Here's this key health issue that needs to be addressed. But in order to address that, we have to make these breakthroughs in science or engineering. And then most of the proposals about what those breakthroughs are. And then you come back to the health problem in terms of the evaluation and things. So in terms of what are the key criteria or questions to distinguish between basic understanding and the application quadrant, for smart health, you should think of the health problem as the application. And so again, like Louis Pasteur, he had a community health issue, a public health issue he was trying to solve, but he had to make advances in microbiology in order to be able to solve that. Hopefully that helps.
Dana, did you want to answer the patent question?
Well, actually, I was going to pose it to you all and moderate, since we have a couple that are open that just came in. So the question is about the technology being patent pending, and does that have an adverse impact on an application being considered? So I don't know, Goli, Tom, or David, if you'd like to take that first.
So my take on that would be, you know, you should think about what are the advances, the fundamental advances that you're going to be making. So you already have a patent. What additional advances are you going to make on top of that? So if it's just, I have this thing that's patented and I'm going to do something with it, but I'm not going to do anything new, I'm just going to apply it to a health problem, probably not appropriate for, actually not appropriate for smart health.
Right.
So we have a couple of questions about the presentation today, including sharing of questions and answers, as well as whether that information, including a recording, will be emailed to participants.
Everything is going to be recorded and posted. I would say please check out the program page. We try not to clutter everybody's email as much as possible, so we try not to send too many follow-up. You've already gotten a few reminders for this one, but we could, but it's going to be everything is going to be linked in our program page anyway for everybody to access. What was the other question that you mentioned about? Oh, the Q&A. So I don't know if it can be posted as a separate attachment, But we are still recording, as and all these recordings will be available. The caption for all this will be available. So everything that we see here is going to be available on the events page with everything else. The Q&A itself as a separate document, I don't think so, but all of what we're talking about is going to be available.
Okay. And then can a single PI propose and apply? Is collaboration a must?
I'll take this one too, if you don't mind, Goli. So, you know, as Goli said, and I reiterated, you know, the team has to cover all the major areas of research expertise that's required to tackle the problem. I suppose there could be a single PI out there who is really strong in a health problem and really strong in the area of science or engineering where there needs to be a fundamental breakthrough, but I don't think that's very likely. So you need to have a team that covers all the major areas of expertise for the project.
And as a follow-up to that, is collaborative research submission from two institutions favored versus one?
I think that's up to the institutions to decide. It's whatever the team wants to do. We whatever that is easiest for them.
So there's another question Sylvia, I see is typing, but the question is about, is it common for NIH to fund different PDs? And now it's...
Oh, it's gone.
It's gone.
It was so, whether you could put in funding levels of 3 to 4 months for people, for multiple people. And I said, you have to realize that the 1.2 million is the total award, direct and indirect. And I deeply hope that your salary is more than 4 months a year for 4 years at 1.2 million, direct and indirect. The problem is that directs tend to begin at 50%, which means you don't see all 1.2 million in your laboratory or for you to dispense. So it really is not as much as it sounds like, and especially not if you think you have 4 months of salary in it.
Go ahead, whoever was talking.
For the funding rate question, I would refer everybody to NSF by the numbers. We don't have the share by individual program policy, but they're published on NSF by the numbers.
And the question about the enforcing a lower overhead rate, it's whatever the indirect rate is for your institution. So.
The only thing I'll say is sometimes the indirects of what negotiated is a little bit different. The budgets don't necessarily come out the same as what you apply to NSF with as when you come over to NIH. And I'll just sort of say that you still have to stay within the 1.2 million, and we work with investigators to move the numbers around a little bit to make sure everything works within what has been negotiated.
I would add too that it's NSF's policy to not support more than 2 months PI, to not provide more than 2 months PI support over all NSF projects, except in special cases. For instance, if there's major teaching requirements, we often make exceptions to that, but there is that requirement as well.
There's a question about revising and resubmitting. So can you revise and resubmit the same application that was rejected last year? Which I wouldn't call it rejected, I would just say it's unfunded.
Very good distinction, yes. Yes, yes, definitely. Because there are some that are really great, and you know, there's a lot that goes into sort of the decision-making process. So the short answer is yes. But what I want to clarify, and I hope that Dana and David can jump in as well, is there's a difference between resubmitting to NSF and NIH. Some of the continuity that you see at NIH is not the same at NSF. we see it at the program directors kind of observe the continuity, and we see the proposal of if it's coming and then things are changed and comments are addressed. But the panel is not going to be the same panel that saw the proposal the first time, and the reviewers don't have the same continuity. Sylvia, please go ahead.
NSF requires that a proposal that is, quote, resubmitted to the same program, unquote, needs to be substantially revised. So, and we're starting to run the software that picks that up.
Thank you.
If I can add to that, you know, the rating scale that we use for smart health is highly competitive, competitive, low competitive, not discussed in the panel. So the difference between low competitive and not competitive is low competitive is this is appropriate for smart health. There's something good here, but it's not just not, you didn't write it up very well. Not competitive is there's some fundamental problem here that, or it doesn't fit with the program at all. So if you got a not competitive, if you got an NC, you probably ought to think really heavily about revising. And that's a major, major difference. Whereas an LC means you're within scope. There's something significant that needs to be addressed, but you could fix this. NC is you probably can't. So.
So I want to add too that it's really helpful to reach out to the Cognizant program officer. This addresses another question that came in. Afterwards, if you're planning on resubmitting, find out, have a conversation, find out exactly what that program officer has, because they can often discuss the reviews with you on a much more specific basis. And like I like to say, that's one of the reasons we're here, is to help improve your proposals.
Somebody's asking, go ahead.
I repeat myself on substantially different? NSF does not want to see the same proposal again. It requires that it is not like a resubmission for NIH where you say what changes you have made, although some program officers like that. It is that it needs to be substantially different. Now you can judge what happens in a year's time in most sciences. And so that one could drive your changes, but it cannot be the same proposal. You say, well, it did really well last time, and it was just the luck of the draw that it didn't get funded. It cannot be the same proposal.
And I can't find it at the moment. I'm looking heavily, but this should be addressed in the grant proposal guide. So if you look in the PAPG, there should be information there about the substantial revision.
It is there, and it actually says it needs to be substantially revised based on comments from the previous review.
But you don't have to answer, we did X in place of Y or Z. And these solicitations change. So it's not like a core solicitation that doesn't change. Although we hope we have one for the next 2 years beyond this one.
So there's a question about a collaborative research submission from two institutions. I just wanted to address that a little bit. Because you can, we love collaborative from multiple institutions. There are two ways to do that. They can be sent as collaborative proposals from separate institutions, or they can be sent as a collaborative proposal from a single institution. I personally favor collaboratives from a single institution just because that gives us more certainty that everybody's going to work together. And we have one point of contact who's in charge of making sure that the project really goes off as proposed. But the idea of the collaboration plan is to try to address that if it comes from two institutions. So be sure that you convince the reviewers that you truly are collaborating, that there's not a zipper in the middle of the proposal and one goes to one institution, another to another institution. That's why this particular solicitation has a required collaboration plan.
There's a question on improving commercial health sensors from a basic point of view using machine learning. Would that be considered something adequate for this call? Again, I think we've tried to stress during this webinar that really we're looking for applications that would be advancing fundamental science in two different areas. Be appropriate as long as you're advancing those two different areas.
The last question on there that we have, and I think we'll be ready to wrap up for the day, is will NIH scores be evaluated based off the NIH review criteria, which are significance, investigator, innovation, approach, and environment?
Dan?
So go ahead, David.
You want to take that, David, or do you want me to take it?
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that is the case, right? The NIH score will still be done with our criteria.
Correct.
And it might help to add, you know, we had a slide on it, but what happens is at the review panel, we have the discussion where each reviewer talks about the proposal, and then we give it an NSF rating, and then we hand it off to the NIH SRO to get the round of NIH scores. So they get both a NSF rating and the summary of the panel discussion, as well as the NIH scores, you know, essentially at the same time.
But again, do not try to tailor your application to any NIH criteria. Think about the NSF evaluation criteria first and foremost. I'll just reiterate that.
Thanks. I think I was going to say I see that, you know, it looks like we're coming to a close with few additional questions. And that is a great one to wrap up on, to be like, yes, please address the NSF, write it to NSF, not NIH. Well, we do have a couple of questions that just came in. So if anybody else has any other questions, please submit it now so we can answer it before we close out. Any limit on equipment costs if we build a medical imaging? Tom, are there any limits?
Well, the per year limit is 300K. So it's 1.2 million total, 300K in any, you know, maximum in any 1 year. So if your equipment costs were to be more than 300K in 1 year, then that would be a limit.
What about the proposal being submitted as a collaborative versus not collaborative?
Well,
I think maybe Sylvia. Yeah, go ahead.
I think if you're clear about the problem with a collaborative with lots and lots of subawards is that you can be nibbled to death by ducks with the overhead on the original 25K for each subaward. That's the trouble with the one central one. The multiple institutions, multiple parts of a collaboration, it is one, making sure you've got track of everything, but also clearly relying on the collaboration plan to ensure that there's a central focus for the project.
So there's a question here about the number of years of the proposal and the budget. And so these are on average 300K per year, upward to 4 years, which would be 1.2. I have not seen anything that's been 2 years or less. The lowest I've seen is 3 years. And in that case, the budget has been a little bit higher in the first 2 years, and totaling up to 1.2. But Goli, Tom?
I don't know if there's any restrictions on that. And
I believe the 300K is, I suggested the 1.2 million is solid.
Yeah.
But if it's the number of years, can be less. So sometimes for other programs,
we've
also
had three. I've funded three.
Right. The only other issue that I can think of is it being competitive enough. You know, like it has to deal with the scope of what's happening. So if the project you're proposing doesn't really require even half the budget here, and it's like a short-term project, maybe this model is not the best to apply for. There's other ones that can fit the smaller size of projects. So it may not be competitive in this type of review. So it's a matter of fitness also for the program. There's a question on how it's broken down, and I think Sylvia is answering that live, which I think the answer is yes, if it has to be certain, like 200 or 400 first year, second year.
So there's a question about the specific areas and the themes. So those themes are a non-exhaustive list. Those are just an emergent list based upon things that we've seen over the last several years. It's really, are you making contributions across the NSF direct routes that participate? So you could actually, for instance, you could have two areas of computer science that you make contributions in. So for instance, you could make advances in human-centered computing and AI, and that would be considered two distinct areas or two areas of engineering. So there's a question about human subjects. Most, if not all, of the projects do have human I can't actually think of a project that didn't have human subjects. So given the evaluation that's expected and you're going after a health problem, you're probably going to need IRB approval. And the number of subjects is really going to depend upon your project.
I'll also say 20 is not a massive size, because it seems like that's sort of what the question's getting at. And when we talk about like large trial, we're talking about like large randomized clinical control trials, we're talking like in the hundreds, like 50, 75, 100, then you start getting outside of a developmental project.
So there's a question about having a physician. You know, as we said, you don't have to have a physician on your team. You have to have somebody, you have to cover all, you have to have research expertise that covers all the major areas of your proposal. Doesn't necessarily have to be a physician to cover the medical aspect. It might be a different type of medical research expertise or public health.
Well, as far as international collaborators, I know Sylvia is typing, but international collaborators are allowed, but NSF doesn't like to give direct funds to international institute. So if you're going to have that, you should have a great justification. The rule of thumb is that it shouldn't be more than 20%. But again, you should really justify if you want to have an international collaborator. Do you guys want to reiterate the limits for the PI, co-PI salary per year? Georgianne just mentioned that for NSF, it's 2 months.
Yeah, so like you said, it's just 2 months. The expectation is no more than 2 months, except for in special circumstances. And that's 2 months per year. And we got a couple questions about needing IRB approval before the submission or upon award. So you don't have to have IRB approval when you submit, but you will have to have documentation, either IRB approval or a determination letter before the award is made.
Server data collections, I assume they're okay. I've never seen anything that says otherwise. They're okay to use. All right, I think I don't see any new questions. Does anybody on the panel want to make any other comments or remarks?
No, I think we're good.
Okay. All right. If we don't have any other questions, and please do submit them if you're there and shy. We still have a few minutes. So the budget question again, the limit is 1.2, but you can spend, or the cap is, so Tom, can you help me clarify this? Explain to everybody about the budget.
So the maximum is 1.2, and my understanding is the maximum per year is 300K. So
that's what I thought, and that's what we have in the slides, and sort of like that's what we've seen. Yeah. But so, yeah, I just wanted to make sure.
So here, I can clarify. The max total cost of directs and indirects is 1.2 million for up to 4 years. If you are going below 4 years, say 3 years, then you can anticipate to reallocate and distribute your budget accordingly to still be within 1.2 million. So the 1.2 million does not change based off the number of years. If you're going for 4 years though, on average, you should be around 300K. We would not expect, you know, something like 5K in the first year and then the rest of the years being substantially lower. So 4 years, an average plus or minus around 300K. Anything less than that, you redistribute to be within 1.2 million in total cost.
Thanks for the clarification. That helps. More questions about the recording. If you guys go to our program page, this presentation is actually a repeat of the one we did on September 25th. So the recordings for that is already up. It's the same slides. So you can already access those. This particular recording should be up in a few days, usually about a week max. So we'll try to make it, you know, as quick as possible, but it's going to be in the next few days.
The answer is you need to stay within 1.2 million in total costs. But if you come in at 500K for 1 year, I can tell you, you most likely will not get funded, but it is not a hard and fast rule. So on average, 300K per year for 4 years, but there's wiggle room there. The hard is you cannot go over 1.2 million.
One question that didn't come up today, Dana, and I don't know if anybody is still left in the participants may have this question or not. was about the new PI status. That question usually comes up, and I didn't see it come up today. But do you want to explain a little bit about the difference between sort of how that works for any PIs that want to keep that status for NIH?
Sure. So first, NSF doesn't have an early stage investigator status. So that's number one. And number two, at NIH, the definition is to be within 10 years of your terminal degree and not have substantial NIH funding, such as an R01. If you come over to NIH, so you apply through Smart Health, and your application is selected to move forward to NIH, and you are classified as an early stage investigator, you will be treated as such, and the application will sort of fall within the ESI realm of pay lines. That is, of course, unless you're on an MPI proposal in which your other investigators are established and don't qualify. But in general, if this is an ESI proposal, the pay line will apply to the grant that comes over to NIH, and then you will not have your ESI status anymore because these applications are awarded as R01s.
Okay. All right. Well, I think that's pretty much most of the questions, although we got a few last minute ones. Can they submit the same proposal to NIH and SCH? It's not the same format, so I would say no. No.
That and there, I think that there are policies about submitting the same scientific contact to multiple federal agencies. So yeah. I would encourage that.
Yes.
Usually NSF doesn't permit that.
Yeah. So even content-wise, if the project has the same content, yeah, we don't really, it like Sylvia and Dana just said, it's not going to be considered. So for any more specific questions, some questions get a little bit into the weeds of budget or topics and stuff like that, I encourage you guys to reach out to us, to use our email and send us things that are more specifically related to topic or sort of the details of your individual project. That will be a better place to answer them. But if it's okay with everyone here, I wanted to sort of wrap things up and you know ask everyone for any more questions to please email us. And thank my NSF and NIH colleagues for being here today. And we hope that it was an informative webinar for you guys. And we hope to see you in panel, either as a reviewer, again, email me. I've already received a few emails. Thank you for those who've reached out. Or our alias, and hopefully best of luck to you guys with joining the SCH community if you're not already part of it. Dana, David, Tom, did you guys want to say anything before we leave? And Sylvia?
Just thanks everybody for attending today and asking such good questions.
Yeah, thank everyone for attending.
Thanks, everybody.